So this month we're exploring the question, what does it mean to be a people of prophecy? The reason that this matters is because it gives us the ability to speak our truth in powerful ways. We take the truth that we know from our inner wisdom and we speak it to the power structures in our society and we take action for a common good. So one common understanding of a prophecy is that it makes a forecast or a prediction. And this might be understood to be some kind of magical power, like a fortune teller looking into a crystal ball. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is something more like, and I wrote this before the storm, what I'm talking about is something more like how a weather forecaster makes a prediction. So they study current information about winds, water, air, heat, and how all of these will play out. Second, they also have information from having studied past patterns. And finally, they make their very best educated guess about how this will create weather in the coming days and weeks. And then, sometimes, they even make suggestions such as, bring your umbrella for the rainy day, or stock up on groceries for the snowstorm, or plan to check on your elderly neighbors during the snowstorm. So, weather forecasters take current information, match it to past information, and suggest future actions. And this weather forecasting is a way of looking at being a people of prophecy. In our case, it means that we get current information from politics, from how people are being treated, from economics. And in some ways, this is public information, and anyone can see it. But on other levels, there are things that the media does not talk about. So then that means that all of us need to have eyes and ears. There are things that you might notice, like how your kids talk, what they report when they come home from school. Or you might notice the demeanor of the employees at the nursing home where you live and make some guesses about the challenges they're dealing with in their lives. Being a people of prophecy means to pay attention, to trust your gut, to see things that you are uniquely able to see. And that is a spiritual lifestyle, because we seek to see with compassion and not turn away from honestly seeing injustice. Sometimes in this world, there are things that are very hard to name, but they must be named. A writer named Lance Morrow, who has, he's written for lots of different major journals and magazines, and he's well-respected, and he's well-respected by ministers and journalists that I respect. Lance Morrow has suggested that in the English language, we have the word evil to name harm that is massive and nonsensical. In his book about evil, he concludes that it is not possible to understand evil, but it is possible to describe it. He is concerned because he says when people become frustrated in their attempts to understand evil, they often conclude that it does not exist. And I quote, "Evil has made a successful career over many centuries by persuading people that it does not exist." Close quote. Furthermore, evil evolves along with technology and human capacity. And so, my friends, as disconcerting as it is, I suggest that looking at evil is part of the process of being a people of prophecy. A vital question is, who is in the position to see the evil? So Lance Morrow, in his book, makes an interesting observation, and he's writing from a career of being a journalist. He says, "If I have a choice between consulting a theologian, a philosopher, or a policeman on the workings of evil, I talk first to the policeman on the theory that he has wider experience of the subject than others do, and might be less apt to lose his way in theory. So he's writing as a journalist, and I wonder who else he would ask. Would he consult a political refugee? Would he consult a student who has been bullied at school? So that raises the question, would those people be able to name the evil as they cope with all the pressures of surviving? And if so, who would listen? My friends, this is why we need to bring our open ears, our open minds, our open hearts as we look around at what is going on in our society. And that is one of the first steps in being a people of prophecy. Next, we look at patterns. And just like the current situations can be named by a few voices, the past patterns can also be named by a few voices that hold the public ear. There are some facts that are commonly accepted. We have history books, but there are many parts of history that are not commonly understood. Each of us in this room holds a different, unique understanding of how politics, history, and family patterns play out. Kasia was able to help me correctly pronounce the Polish name. So that's one example. Another example is people who live through different political events, such as the Great Depression, and come out the other side with a really different story about what happened. Or people who come to the United States in different ways and have different names for what it means to be an immigrant. People who serve in the military and have different feelings and complex questions about safety and pride. So all of these are examples about how we each have a different perspective on what is played out in society before this time, so we have a different data set to predict how things might play out in the future. This means that being a people of prophecy, we need to honor the voices of our ancestors, and we need to listen to our insights and our instincts, not just the voice that holds the main public ear. So it takes spiritual rigor for us to set aside the time for listening to what we know is as close to truth as possible. It would be tempting to get pulled away from listening and learning from our past by the demands of daily life. But to be a people of prophecy, we need to make time for knowing truth. So I've named two of the three steps: knowing the present, looking at the past, and now the next one is then deciding what to do in the future. This is not only an intellectual looking forward. It is a looking forward from the compassionate part of our hearts and our wise instincts. We have our spiritual lives. We need to take time to meditate and reflect so that we are guided to right action. In the same way that Buddha sat under the tree, in the same way that Malcolm was transformed by his time in prison, in the same way that Jesus had 40 days in the wilderness, each of them came back and engaged with other humans. They engaged in a way that looked at the complexities of the human condition, and then they took concrete action for it to be better. Another person who looked at his present moment, put it in the context of past patterns, and then suggested action is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I read some of his journals where he wrote about what it was like for him in the days leading up to what has now become a very famous moment, the bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955. And what struck me is that when he got the phone call that Rosa Parks had sat in the back of the bus, and he knew that there was going to be a gathering at the church that night, he had a few hours at home, and he writes in his journal he didn't know what to do. For 2 hours, he sat there, silent, not knowing what to do. But the tool that he had was prayer. And what I ask each of us is, what are the tools that we have? Is your tool prayer? Is there a different tool that you have in that moment of silence so that then you know how to go forward and act? He also used his tools to stick with it. And I ask each of us, what are our tools, our spiritual tools, that help us stick with it? I want to make a very clear distinction. Having spiritual stillness and waiting for wisdom is not the same as not eventually acting. My friends, this is very significant because I could choose not to decide what to do going forward. Many of us find it easier to look the other way. Deciding what to do going forward can be very hard, but history tells us that opting out of deciding what to do going forward is usually wrong. One voice that spoke this loud and clear is a man named Elie Wiesel, who was a teenager when he was taken to the concentration camps during Nazi attempts to exterminate the Jews. He did live after that imprisonment, and he later went on to write and speak about the importance of doing something to act against evil. He pointed out that we must remember the past, and we must make active, not passive, choices about how we live together. To do nothing is to contribute to the problem. In his Nobel acceptance speech, he said, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim." So I want to suggest that one of the tools that we have as a people, a plural, not single individuals, but a people of prophecy, is the fact that we come together on a regular basis. We practice reflecting. We practice engaging in spiritual tools. And I want to tell a story that happened this past week. And the main person involved knows that I'm going to tell this story, and he's happy that I'm going to tell this story. So this past week, one of our church members went to court. 16 people from our congregation showed up to be present with him. Before we went into the courtroom, we sat in a small room off to the side, preparing to go in. And instinctively, we began humming "Spirit of Life," which is a hymn that we sing here on a regular basis. And as we did that, as we were humming "Spirit of Life," we didn't say, "Hey, everybody, let's sing 'Spirit of Life.'" One person just started doing it. Everybody else started humming it. We all knew the tune. I noticed that the guards outside the room had gone silent. They weren't chattering anymore. I think they were listening to our humming "Spirit of Life." And when we were done, the lawyer came in the room. She said, "It's time to go in the courtroom." And she said, "I have tears in my eyes from listening to you guys sing together." One of the other people on the legal team said to me afterwards, he said, "Wow, your church people really showed up." And what I am planning to say back to him is, yes, this church has a theology of showing up in this lifetime. So that's one example of how we are a people, a plural people of prophecy together. Another example is the story of Rukovia that we heard earlier. Those people worked together in the context of political and religious repression to literally bring bricks and mortar to build a town and to bring wood and metal to create a printing press to spread good news. This took time, energy, money, courage, and faith, and they were really creative. We all have creativity too. They thought outside the box, and we can think out of the box also. Another very current example is a letter that was written on December 14th, so just a little bit less than a month ago. It was written by the Unitarian Universalist Association president, the Reverend Peter Morales, and he was writing to religious leaders in this letter. And he was reporting on what they're doing in this current context. He says, "At the national level, we are working to form partnerships with other faith groups and other Unitarian Universalist organizations. My office is working with the Multicultural Growth and Witness staff and with our field staff, meaning people on the ground all around the country, the Unitarian Universalist Association, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, and our shared College of Social Justice are working together closely. And I have had a number of meetings with my counterparts in other faiths." So he, as a national leader, is working with other people to be a people, a plural, a prophecy. My friends, this is the time for organization. This is the time to make sure you are connected to groups that you trust and are willing to act with. This is the time to build your skills for speaking clearly, for responding to the call. This is the time to step up and say, "I am willing to act." Know the action that you are willing to take. Is the action that you're willing to take to work in the legislative level for policy change to prevent the loss of rights? Or is the action that you're willing to take direct protection to help people whose rights are being violated in a present moment? Or is there something else that I don't even have words for that you know is your right action? And yet, it is scary for some of us to act. Fear is real. There is fear of losing one's job because you spoke up. There's fear of losing friends because you took a certain action. There is fear of physical harm because of giving resistance. There is even fear that maybe we're not doing the most effective thing. So let me talk a little bit about fear. When we focus on fear, that makes it worse. What we can do paradoxically is try to relax and focus on constructive ideas. And when we relax our focus, we widen our gaze. We widen our capacity to see possibilities. There is literally in our eyes, the nerves have more peripheral vision. Then we have many more tools to bear to bring to each situation. We have so much capacity to cope and respond. To be spiritually awake is to look at things as they are in this present moment. To know our fear and feel it and find a way through and around it. If you believe that each of us has a divine spark inside of us, then that is the mandate to work through the fear and get to the other side. If there is anything that you have ever used your spiritual life for, anything you have ever leaned on this religious community for, now is one of the most important times. Do not let your fear win. Let your values and your action win. You may be called now to do things that are outside your comfort zone. That is often how it feels when you do what is right in uncertain times. You may be called to show up in a way you never knew you could. You may need to learn new skills or team up with unfamiliar people. So go ahead. Get started. Blessed be. Amen.